the reserve system was planted here, as it was in other former British colonies, as an act of dispossession.
So they were not only breaking down Aboriginal law and customs and traditions, which was the intention, they were actually excising other people away.
It was a great enterprise, and it was prime property for pastoralists.
We would like it if the government leave us here. Give us this ground and let us manage Corranderk and get all the money. Why not let the people do it for themselves? Why don't those white fellows who want to break the station go and break some of the squatter stations? The squatters have got more ground in Victoria than we have. We've only got a little piece. White fellows ought to leave us alone.
Ceremony is at the centre of his vision, and he's recording what matters most in his world.
Barak is one of those people that instills in us, in the Wurundjeri people, that you can be Aboriginal and be proud. He showed that way back in, you know, late 1800s.
It feels special coming to a place like I know where my ancestors were, and they had to come. They did ceremonies and things here. Yeah, feels good.
Some of the voices you'll hear in today's program. Welcome to Away here on RN, Daniel Browning with you. 150 years ago, one of Australia's best-known Aboriginal reserves was established on a site about 60 kilometres northeast of Melbourne. And it grew into a prosperous farm, a model community, even though life was hard, punctuated by the routine laid down by the church and the state, a strict regime of manual labour, and the omnipresent mission bell. But it wasn't left to succeed or fail. Instead, there were two inquiries, one a full-blown royal commission, the other a select committee. And it's a story that's being told on stage in Sydney. In Corranderk, We Will Show the Country, a play developed by Ilbidgery, Melbourne's Indigenous Theatre Company. And there's a new book, also based on the testimony of Aboriginal witnesses who gave evidence to those official inquiries. Today, producer Pavel Schrey meets some of the descendants of Corranderk. This is Leave Us Here, 150 Years of Corranderk.
My name, Murrindindi, that was given to me by my mother. My mother was a senior elder of the Wurundjeri people. She was the last person born here on Corranderk. It's a very sacred place. The best time to come out here is around about 6 o'clock over the evening, as it's just going dusk, and this bush comes alive with spirit people of my ancestors. It's a very, very spiritual land. And as I'm talking, I'm just looking across the river there, and I can see the jelwick tree, the jelwick. Jelwick are our fire sticks. So, you know, as I look here on the Badger Creek, there's so much goodness here still growing what we can use today. Over here on the right-hand side, we've got the pomaderas. The pomaderas, this one here, that's used for making spears because we go thicker in the bush. And if you look over to the right-hand side here, see all the long, straight spears over there.
Murrindindi is the Naringita or headman of the Wurundjeri people, who, with the Bunwurrung, are the traditional owners of Melbourne. We're sitting by the Badger Creek on the Corranderk Reserve, about 60 kilometres east of Melbourne. We're in the middle of the forest. All around us are tall, twisting eucalypts called wurrung, the manna gum. It's after this tree that the Wurundjeri clan takes its name.
And over here, we've got our soap tree. The blackwood tree, we'd get the leaves and rub our hands with it, and it suds up like a soap, and it's like an antiseptic. But the most important thing is the fire stick tree here. The fire sticks were fanned right up as far as Queensland, the top end of Australia. But they only grow along the Badger Creek here in Healesville, in Victoria. They don't grow anywhere else, and it's a very sacred tree. And that one I'm looking at just over there, my ancestors would have used that. That tree there is probably about 300 years old. And they would have camped along this creek where we're sitting now. And just over the back here, there's what we call a birthing tree. And my mother was born there.
The five Kulin nations are the Wurundjeri, Bunwurrung, Wathaurong, Tanurong, and Dja Dja Wurrung, who collectively owned about 50,000 square kilometres of land and waters. In Melbourne's west, the Keilor archaeological site has found evidence of Aboriginal occupation for well over 2,000 generations. But then, six or so generations ago, came the Europeans. In 1835, John Batman arrived by ship in Port Phillip Bay, which covers the southern part of what is now Melbourne, Bunurong country. It was Batman who drafted a treaty with the ancestors of the Kulin. Murrindindi's great-great-great-grandfather was one of five clan leaders present.
Babijan signed the John Batman Treaty in 1835, but when we say he signed a treaty, my people did not read or write. So what they did, John Batman put a little cut in their thumb, put the blood of their thumb print on the treaty, and that was for 600,000 acres of land. John Batman gave them blankets, he gave them magnifying glasses, he gave them six shirts for 1,500 people, he gave them tea, and he took the land. My people gave him a managum leaf, because the managum leaf was to give them a safe journey whilst they were upon their Wurundjeri land. A managum leaf is like a passport. So my great-great-great-grandfather Babijan gave him a passport to travel through the land. No, John Batman took the land from the Aboriginal people, my ancestors.
Within one generation, an estimated 250 people from the Kulin nations have survived the onslaught of disease, massacres and starvation. By 1859, 20 years after Batman concluded his one-sided treaty, Simon Wonga has become the Naringita of the Wurundjeri. A proud traditional man, he was also present as a young boy at the signing of the treaty. The Corindirk story begins with Wonga successfully campaigning for a parcel of land for the Tunurong, one of the five Kulin nations, at a place called Akron, not far from Corindirk. Historian Wayne Atkinson is a Yorta Yorta elder.
Before Corindirk, the land rights struggle goes back to the days of Akron over the top of the mountains, where they did achieve, probably one of the first groups in Australia to achieve land rights in 1859, mind you.
Simon Wonga leads a campaign which petitions some supportive government officials. And Wonga writes in one petition how his countrymen want a block of land on their country where they may sit down and plant corn and potatoes. But the Akron victory was short-lived. After less than a year, the mission was closed and the people were moved to the Mohican station, which was cold and unsuitable. For the next 3 years, Simon Wonga and his cousin William Barak campaigned for land for the Kulin nations on the flats near the Yarra River. They lead a party of their men to Melbourne with gifts of baskets and weapons, where they make a speech in language asking for some land at a traditional campsite which they call Corindirk.
Corindirk. Where did Corindirk come from? You know what Corindirk means?
It's the Christmas bush.
It is the Christmas bush. And as I'm looking here today, just let me have a look around. If you look straight through here, you'll see the Christmas bush. Between the two big managum trees and the one on the right-hand side, that's called the Christmas bush. The reason it was called a Christmas bush or a mint bush, Christmas time it comes out in a bell flower. Also, it was called the mint bush because what my people would do, they would catch kangaroo, getting preparing for the campfire, then they put cuts in the kangaroo meat and put the leaves in the meat, and it put a mint flavour through the meat.
In March 1863, the Kulin walk to the confluence of the Badger Creek and the Yarra River, near present-day Healesville. They will live here for the next 60 years. Initially, the residents are happy and have a very good relationship with the manager, the Scottish Presbyterian lay preacher, John Green. Corindirk had a school, a bakery, and a butcher. It was entirely self-sufficient and even commercially successful, selling hops, wheat, and traditional baskets to people from Melbourne.
Even though times were hard and they become totally self-sufficient, they enjoyed being able to see their reward for their work.
As senior Wurundjeri elder Auntie Joy Wandon Murphy explains, this time of plenty was in stark contrast to the previous years of starvation.
There was a cattle that grazed there and they were able to have their own food. And of course they did have still traditional food.
My mum said she had a most beautiful life growing up. She would not regret growing up here on Corranderk. She said, of a morning, we used to go out and we'd go down and catch some fish in the Badger Creek. We'd go out and catch some possums. My mum had a pet possum and a pet wombat what followed her everywhere she went. And she said she had so much happy times on Corranderk as a little girl growing up.
It was under a mission management, being told what to do every part of your day, how to do it, when to do it, even to, you know, the chiming of the bell. You can't practice any of your customs or traditions, you can't speak language. And the Aboriginal community had to be untrue to who they were. And I would find that extremely difficult, let alone all the other pressures that they had. So they were not only breaking down Aboriginal law and customs and traditions, which was the intention, they were actually excising other people away.
When you look at the history of Corranderk, you know, and you look at the history of the other reserve like Cummerganja, Tyres and all of those places, it was very similar in terms of the early days, very rapid growth, a sense of community, spirit. Along the way, you see these sort of continued interferences, divide-and-rule tactics being used by government. When you look at it overall, it was part of a much broader plan by the British in terms of its policies of segregation and control. And it's something that went hand-in-hand with the issue of terra nullius, and that is, when terra nullius was applied and Australia was supposed to be an unoccupied territory, and then after it was settled, they said, hang on, there's something wrong here. You know, there's people wherever we go.
The Kulin not only lost access to their vast lands and waters, living on just a sliver of their country, but were now completely controlled by colonial laws.
Devising this system, you know, of these small allotted pieces of land where people could be gathered to, and then introducing laws like they did in other places, such as in 16th century in Ireland, there was a full-on policy of segregation and control there that was practiced and used against the Irish and in other British colonies. So by the time it reaches Australia in the 18th century, it becomes a fairly formidable force of segregation and control. The reserve system was planted here, as it was in other former British colonies, as an act of dispossession.
Corranderk's sort of, I guess, history can be quite stark and quite traumatic in many respects, but I guess there's that famous quote that came from Corranderk: the reason why they placed Aboriginal people, a lot of Wurundjeri people, onto Corranderk was because they wanted to smooth the pillow of the dying race.
Brian Andy is a Yorta Yorta human rights educator who's written about the history of Victoria's Aboriginal missions and reserves.
At the same time, within Victoria, they introduced a half-caste act, or what they called the Half-Caste Act. Anybody that was of mixed descent or mixed blood had to get off the mission and reserves. You go through records in relation to Corranderk and you find that, you know, that was the intent of it, was to basically kind of kill off full-blooded Aboriginal people and kill off a culture effectively. But looking at Corranderk is quite important in that respect of, you know, well, this is what the intent was. This is part of Australian history that we often don't celebrate or promote because it's difficult, because it's hard to, you know, acknowledge, and effectively it's genocide.
In 1874, just 10 years after Corranderk was established, it is already a successful and thriving farming community. But the much-feared Board for the Protection of Aborigines was actively undermining it. The board wants to close Corranderk and move the residents to the Murray River. And so began a 10-year campaign of protest by the Aboriginal residents that included letter-writing, petitions and marches to Parliament to stay on their country. In 1875, Simon Wonga, the Ngurrungeeta, or headman of the Wurundjeri, dies, and is succeeded by his cousin William Burrock. Burrock is a skilled mediator. He leads many delegations to the Parliament in Melbourne, walking the 65 kilometres with representatives of the Kulin Nations. Due to the campaign of protests by Burrock, other Kulin Nation leaders and their supporters, there was a Royal Commission into Corranderk. The Royal Commission hears evidence from the residents of Corranderk, Burrock among them.
Mr. William Burrock, you were born on the Yarra?
Yes.
You have been on this station ever since it was established?
Yes.
You are too old to work now?
Yes.
Would you like the government to give you all the food and clothing you want and no work?
We would like it if the government leave us here. Give us this ground and let us manage Corranderk and get all the money. Why not let the people do it for themselves? Why don't those white fellas who want to break the station go and break some of the squatter stations? The squatters have got more ground in Victoria than we have. We've only got a little piece. White fellas ought to leave us alone. We're in a Christian land and we ought to love one another with brotherly love.
Burrock then went on to say that the manager of Corranderk, a man called Strickland, should be removed. He wanted the Scottish preacher John Green to be reappointed manager. Green's removal had been orchestrated by the board in 1874.
We want Mr. Strickland to go away, and we don't want any board inspecting over us. Only one man, and that is Mr. Green, and the station to be under the Chief Secretary. Then we will show to the country that we can make it work and make it pay. I know it will.
Another prominent leader of the rebellion at Corranderk who gave evidence to the Royal Commission was Thomas Bamfield, a Tunnerong man.
Who got up that deputation that waited on the Chief Secretary?
We got it up ourselves.
No one tried to agitate on the question?
No.
No one has tried to make you dissatisfied with the management of the place?
No.
What was the reason for going down?
Well, we heard the station was going to be sold and shifted. We saw it in the papers and that they were going to do away with the station and we didn't want it, so we went down to see the Chief Secretary. I think they've done enough in this country to ruin the natives without taking it from us anymore.
The demise of Corranderk began with the passing of the Half-Caste Act in 1886. Those Aboriginal people who weren't considered to be full blood were thrown off. Only the so-called real Aborigines were allowed to remain. By the turn of the 20th century, there were only a handful of people left, including the octogenarian William Burrock, and Corranderk became unviable.
The thing is about his drawings is that ceremony is at the centre of his vision and he's recording what matters most in his world. This is a Naji or public ceremony performed at night.
As Corranderk declines, Burrock's reputation as an artist grows.
Well, I think it's very important because he is really the first Indigenous Victorian and Indigenous Australian artist of renown.
Judith Ryan, Senior Curator of Indigenous Art at the National Gallery of Victoria, which holds many of Burrock's images.
He moved to Corranderk in 1863. This became a centre, like an art centre, the first Indigenous art centre in Australia, really. He became well known amongst the artistic community of Melbourne. A number of dignitaries visited Corranderk and requested to seek robberies. These were forbidden by the Moravian Order running Corranderk. But in lieu of performing robberies, he made drawings recording his culture, which were then given to government officials or member of the royal family, the British royal family, and his fame spread far and wide throughout the colony.
We're standing in front of one of Burrock's best-known works, Corroboree, which is on permanent display at the National Gallery.
You've got the two Narangita headmen wearing possum skin cloaks, decorated with clan designs, and the dancers are performing wearing possum skin cloaks as well, with clapsticks and boomerangs. But the amazing thing about this is that the viewer is taken right inside this event as if they're part of this corroboree, this public ceremony. And you've got the sense of the dance rhythm that's uniting all of the people witnessing and participating in the ceremony. You've also got the two campfires, supposedly representing Wa, the crow, and Bunchal, the eagle, the two very important totems and creator ancestors of the Wurundjeri clan of the Woiwurrung people.
Barak's images weren't simply nostalgic. They had a purpose.
I think it was to communicate and to preserve and to maintain culture and to pass that message on and to try and get that sense to outsiders. It mattered to him that Europeans understood more of his culture and respected it more, acknowledged it. I think they tell us about the importance of community. It's also this idea of sharing the food of the land, of both plant and animal being at one with humans and with nature. Something that he wanted to pass on to his descendants, and something that was under threat. This was a contested space where he was living. The controlling culture had taken over the spaces that he, where he used to perform ceremonies. I mean, we're looking at Birrell and Ma. This was a major place for ceremonies. That was now the centre of Melbourne. And they had this sort of place, Corranderk, that for a while was somewhere safe that they loved, but then became threatened by draconian laws.
This is Away on RN, and today a program that marks the 150th anniversary of Corranderk, the former Aboriginal reserve northeast of Melbourne. It's produced by Pavel Schrey.
William Barak died at Corranderk in 1903, over 80 years of age. Earlier this year, members of the Wurundjeri community gathered at Healesville Sanctuary, which was once part of Corranderk, to unveil a life-size bronze statue of Barak. Murrindindi arrived at the ceremony wrapped in a possum skin cloak, singing with a group of children from Healesville.
I feel very emotional. I feel very excited. I feel like we've reached a part in, especially in my life, at the age of 68. I feel that we're not going to be forgot anymore, and I'm just so proud of what's happened, and I'm so proud of the children singing along with us. And that song was Wandik Kundawa. Wandik Kundawa mean come, sit and listen, come and join us. Namaji Wongi, Namaji mean non-Aboriginal people or other Aboriginal people from other tribes, come in and join us, sit around our campfire, and Wongi, we will share our food with you tonight. So it's a song of coming together as one.
One of the speakers at the unveiling of Barak's statue is also one of the youngest members of the Wurundjeri clan.
My name's Jack.
And how old are you, Jack?
I am 12, yes.
And you're William Barak's relation?
Yes, four generations.
So that makes you his...
Four great, 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 great uncle. Nephew, sorry.
What do you know about him and what does he mean to you?
William Barak was an amazing person with all his stories and what he did for fight his rights. He's a big inspiration for me.
And you have an Aboriginal name as well?
Yes, it's Googar, it means Goanna.
Goanna?
Yes.
Is that your special animal?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And Where the statue was unveiled before, that's also Corranderk, so this is a special place for Wurundjeri people for you. What do you feel when you come here?
It feels special coming to a place like I know where my ancestors were, and they had to come. They did ceremonies and things here. Yeah, it feels good.
And Murrindindi, your great-great-uncle, is sitting next to you here, Jack. Do you do a lot of stuff together, a lot of cultural things together?
Yeah, when he comes to school and we get to do things like we've thrown boomerangs and he talks about the ceremonies and stories. And we've come here, we've done we did our ceremony, a naming ceremony last year, Easter, and that was good, yeah.
Nice to meet you, Jack.
Thanks.
David Wandon is a Wurundjeri elder and land manager.
Barak, a very powerful man. He was a man not afraid to put his views across in a colony where you wouldn't think that sort of thing would be tolerated. It was only not so long ago that, you know, I wouldn't speak up about being black. The people that I live with in the city, when I was adopted, going to school, they told me not to tell anybody I was black because I could get away with it. It used to be a shameful thing to be Aboriginal. But Barak is one of those people that instills in us, in the Wurundjeri people, that you can be Aboriginal and be proud. He showed that way back in late 1800s. A lot of people today wouldn't even think of doing what he tried to do.
While there were many strong, remarkable men like Barak campaigning for land and rights, the Aboriginal rebellion at Corranderk had at its helm many courageous and powerful women. One of these was Bunurong leader Louisa Briggs.
She played a significant role in Corranderk. She was writing letters, but there's letters. Her daughter was writing letters to the Select Committee. It's like a royal commission, but it was called the Select Committee, and she was demanding rights.
Auntie Carolyn Briggs is a Bunurong elder and the great-granddaughter of Louisa Briggs.
She knew there was things going on and knew that this parceling off of the land, if you ever go to Corranderk, and what my understanding of Corranderk and the hop farming, it was a great enterprise and it was prime property for pastoralists. We should learn that there were families that were dislocated and put onto that landscape. How we had to adapt and assimilate to a system that was alien. But we did it. We mastered it. There was an amazing intelligence there, but there was amazing intelligence going on before that. It was oppressive, but they made the best opportunity of what they could get.
There is, however, resilience of our community and the way in which they wanted to maintain what they had. And I just know from the stories from my mum that was told to me from Granny Jemima and other people at Corranderk, was the way in which they survived those times by secretly doing things. And, you know, the story about my grandma, mum loved telling me that, you know, they were supposed to go join together and say their prayers at the end of the day and thank God. So what they did was, as very quietly spoken people too, yeah, just going to Granny's house and she'd make it all dark with the curtains and put their hands up as if they were praying and then speak language.
Another female leader of the rebellion at Corranderk was Caroline Morgan, a Jarja Wurrung woman.
Caroline Morgan, Aboriginal, examined.
Have you been long here?
17 years, I think I am.
And where do you come from?
The Loddon.
Have you a good hut?
Yes.
Is it warm?
It's not lined. The wind comes in. We had to line my bedroom with bags.
Have you got a mattress?
Yes. We had to get the straw, though. We were not allowed to get straw one year, so Annie Hamilton and I had to cut some rushes from the hills.
Say anything you have to say. Do not be frightened.
This is my evidence. Corranderk, November 16th, 1881. I have asked Mrs. Strickland for a pair of blankets for my sick boy. She told me she must write to the inspector first, And then I told her, must my little boy be perishing with the cold until you get a letter from the inspector? She told me she had orders only to give a pair of blankets for every hut. And then I told her, what must I do then? I have three beds. I had to have words over it. The children could not sleep together on account of one of them having a chest complaint. So I tore the blanket in two and I gave them my blankets along with it. This is my evidence.
In 1924, the Corindoc Mission was closed. Those who were left were relocated to Lake Tyers, another mission in far-off Gippsland. And what was left of Corindoc was handed over to the Soldier Settlement Scheme, whereby plots of agricultural land were given to veterans who'd returned from the First World War.
I guess the heartache and the pain of what was suffered at Corindoc just really impacts on you so much more. You wish that you could turn back the clock. You wish you could speak to any one of those 300 people at any one time that were resident on Corindoc. You wish that you could now change the way in which they endured that pain and anguish for those 60 years. My dad, I love my dad so deeply. And I hated the way he died not being regarded as a legal citizen of his own country, and yet he fought for this country, you know, in World War One. And there's those moments. And my mum coming here as a child with foster parents that she loved. But she never knew her own mother, and yet she had the strength to have 10 children. And so Corindoc was a place where many families came from mainly within Victoria, but a few from just over the river, from New South Wales. And I think the united front that they displayed at Corindoc just shows that that strength is of the utmost importance when you're trying to achieve something. You know, respect, like Barak did, that religion is a belief and that each and everyone should respect each other's beliefs. So there was a nice mix of the way that Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal cultures could be combined but strengthening for the young ones that were coming through.
If you look at the history of Corindoc or Cummeragunga, you can sort of find points in history where the people said, no, we don't want to be treated like this. No, we want our traditional lands and our connection to our traditional land recognised. You know, history's littered with all these instances where Aboriginal people have resisted and said, no, we want our rights recognised.
When you have something that's taken away from you, and in particular for the first Australians, when, you know, that your belonging, your identity, your land is taken, for that to be removed almost removes you. So they had everything to fight for. And so land rights has not been a new thing. Land rights has been a steady climb to where it's come today. And they were hard times. They were not just putting a letter in the mail, because that just didn't happen. You know, what they did was they had their letters and then they'd walk all the way from Corindoc to Melbourne, and then wanting to get entry into Parliament House wasn't always easy either. And I think, for me, one of the most famous statements is Barak making that statement, you know, me no leave this country, there are no mountains for me on the Murray. And that in itself is a land rights statement.
Despite its closure 90 years ago, Corindoc has helped shape contemporary notions of identity.
It's indelibly embedded in identity, because in the Koori community, the Aboriginal community here in Victoria, your point of identification is usually, you know, who's your mob, your tribal group. I'm Yorteyot, I'm Wurundjeri, I'm Jadjawarang. Oh, what was the name of the reserve? Oh, I'm Yorteyot, Cumbra, or I'm Wurundjeri, Corindur, you know, Akron, or I'm Gunai, Lake Tyres. So the reserve name is used, is indelibly imprinted in the tribal name you identify with. So that's, you know, how important reserves have remained. So, like, it's a huge slice of history in itself that is there, has its own storylines and its own voices, you know, that tell those, articulate those storylines. So it's a very rich history.
Local Wurundjeri community members are demolishing this desolate shell, once the Army's School of Health. It was a place where local Aborigines came to sell their artefacts and is part of a huge tract which once housed the old Corindurk Mission. For the Aborigines, the district is steeped in tradition. It's dotted with significant cultural sites. The Wurundjeri's 800 members have had a long wait for the title to a major part of their ancestral land, but they say it's been worth it. This small sanctuary holds the graves of more than 300 Aborigines. It's a deeply spiritual site and has already been handed back to the people. The old army site, though, will be a place for the public. One day it'll house an Aboriginal cultural centre which the community hopes will attract some of the thousands who visit the Healesville Sanctuary each year.
We can go back there doing our Naganiki. You understand it as a corroboree, but we call it Naganiki. And we can go back there, we can go fishing, we can go hunting, we can make our canoes, we can make spears, we can make the fire sticks if we need to. Corindurk, I think it's a very special place, and it's a very spiritual place where my ancestors lived.
I too have to reclaim speaking my language because I haven't had aunts or uncles for a long time. Both my parents have gone. So for me too, I was losing language. Was in here, was in within my heart, but I haven't been speaking it to anyone. So I felt it was really important for me to start speaking again, but to also share that, pass it down to the many generations. And just on that, I've invited non-Aboriginal kids into the classes because I think it's beneficial for them, because I teach the history of the area. You know, I'd be walking around the local supermarket and next minute you'll hear someone call out Kai Bamboo, and, you know, they're actually saying, "Hello, Auntie." And it's a kid on a bike, you know, with his helmet and earplugs in and all the rest. And you just go, oh, that sounds beautiful. You know, this language was so fluent years ago, and there's snippets of it happening now very publicly. And when they ride off, they say, Twangdenin, you know, farewell. So, yeah, it's very exciting.
Narajaranum, do they wrong?
Last night I had my granddaughter around and she's six and she started school. I took her to school and when I walked up there, one of the other children up there said, "Oh, that's Murrindindi, the one who comes to our school and teaches, and that's Ava's grandfather." And she said, "My name is not Ava. My name is Marla Wallaby." And the mother said to me, "Your granddaughter is very, very proud of her culture." I said, "Of course she is." So I said, "She'll stand up for her rights. She'll stand up for her people. And she's only a six-year-old girl. When I was six, I was out to deny who I was."
Women Jacka, welcome. Wurundjeri Bull, Yiman Condi Bik. The Wurundjeri people welcome everyone to the land today. Wurundjeri Nononau, Budumbawo, Kondi Nangnak, Dubadin Bik, Bulikbo, Tilikin. The Wurundjeri people want you to look after and protect the land as they did long before. Hello, my name is Colin Hunter Jr. or Woolert, meaning possum. A name given to me by my grandmother as a young boy. I'm a proud and passionate seven generation Wurundjeri man and a direct descendant of Bibijin, who is Nalangeta, or head of the tribe at time at first settlement.
Another project, Reclaiming History and Culture, was launched a few months ago by the Yarra City Council.
Yeah, no, I like this story. Look, I was up in Brunswick Street about 18 months ago, and I bumped into one of the councillors, Sam Garlard, who's the Greens councillor at the City of Yarra, and he asked me to have a couple with him. He told me about this event that was happening at Fitzroy Town Hall coming up, and it was called the Beating of the Bounds. It was a British ceremony, and it was to celebrate Fitzroy being a municipality for 150 years. And Sam said to me, he said, where were the Wurundjeri people in 1860? And I said to him at the time, I said, you better sit down, Sam, because, yeah, it's a pretty sad story. I said, by 1860, the Wurundjeri people were down to 124 descendants, with 44 of them being children. So it came really, really close, colonisation, to wiping out the Wurundjeri. This history the Wurundjeri History Project came about from this conversation, and it ended up going to a council resolution.
It's not an easy history, but I think it's a really important history for people around Australia in any given area to know. So being in the area that's now known as City of Yarra, which is Wurundjeri country, we really want to try and promote that history and culture within the broader community.
And one of the more innovative projects is the Wurundjeri History App. This is like a walking tour you can do on your smartphone of all the important Wurundjeri sites in the City of Yarra. Daniel DeCrew is the Special Projects Officer with the Yarra City Council.
We believe that's the first app of its kind in Australia, and what I'd personally really like to see is to see that rolled out across Australia, so as that no matter where you go in the country, you can access this information about the traditional owners of the area and identify a few sites of significance, and you can, you know, take a self-guided tour.
It's a 60-year story. I have to understand that missions and reserves were established for people to be hoarded onto there for that assimilation process. So that 60 years is not a long time when you think about it, but certainly they should know the story of Corranderk, why they came there, the struggle, the survival, all of those things that are so important to have given us the right to be where we are today and who we are today still.
There's a history that's already here in this country that's been swept under the carpet that needs to be shown. And we talk about reconciliation in this country, but if we want true reconciliation, well, we need to acknowledge the past, acknowledge it, and then move forward as a nation together.
My road is the road towards reconciliation. My road is working as one people. What's happened in the past, we can't forget, but we've got to go for the future of our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. What we should learn about Corranderk, that is the history of this land. Forget about Queensland, Northern Territory, West Australia. Forget about Uluru. Learn about your own Indigenous people in your own backyard.
It's my place. Where else would I be? I grew up in the city for 30 years, left Hillsborough when I was 6 and came back when I was 36 for my dad to retire back up here. And he took me around and showed me areas where he used to go fishing. He used to take me fishing, but I couldn't remember them. But after one or two days of him showing me his boyhood sites, I moved up here the following week, I think, and I will never leave it again. Not ever. I've been offered jobs overseas. I've been offered jobs interstate. I don't ever want to leave Wurundjeri country, but specifically, I don't ever want to move away from Hillsville or away from Corranderk, because the land that I'm living on was part of the Corranderk station. It's just, I don't know, it's home.
Today's feature, Leave Us Here, 150 Years of Corranderk, was produced in late 2013 by Pavel Schrey to mark the 150th anniversary.